Welcome to NavyBMR.com, where we hope to advance your career. NavyBMR.com is an unofficial website and shall not claim to be, nor should it be assumed to be affiliated with the United States government, Department of the Navy, or the Department of Defense. Information contained herein is unclassified, is for reference and education only, and shall not be considered as official policy or directive. Welcome. My name is Steve, and I'm going to be your instructor today. Today we're going to be talking about Navy Education Training 14295 Bravo, specifically Chapter 6, Anatomy and Physiology. Now I want to give a little warning on this and kind of touch on something that I'm probably going to recap as we go through this. This is a very cumbersome 121-page chapter, and it's very, very detailed. And knowing your anatomy, knowing your physiology, knowing the biological components and the chemistries associated with the human body is absolutely critical to being able to do a good physical assessment. The physical assessment is where we make our money. This is not a class in a full spectrum anatomy and physiology. We are going to focus on what you need to kind of keep in mind. Tips, tricks, study tips, everything that we're going to need to do for you to be successful in your Navy-wide advancement exam. So please, please, please keep that in mind. I highly encourage you to have a copy of this with you or have a digital copy open on the multimedia device that you're following along with us because, like I said, it is very cumbersome. So, as we dig into this, the anatomical man and the variations of the planes and how we look at it. So before we can even go into all the way down to like a cellular level or understanding the organ systems and how does our body work and what are we looking at, we got to know how to properly communicate to the different planes and how that person would be standing. So from an anatomical man standpoint, they're standing standing upright, and their palms are facing forward, right? So our anterior, so palms are facing anterior, and they're out to the sides. So here we have an example of a female, and we're going to chop her into planes. We have our transverse, which is going to be coming across right here, okay? Transverse plane. We're going to have our sagittal plane. Now, keep in mind that the sagittal plane is going to be right down the middle. That's going to be the predominant one that we're going to be looking at. From there, once we break into these planes, that's where we can get into lateral and medial. So if you're having trouble kind of remembering some of those, medial, everything's coming into me. So the inside of your legs, the inside of your arm, it's everything's coming inboard, so to speak. Lateral is going to be on the outside. Again, want to make sure that you reference how the person's standing. This one, the arms are out a little bit more for a little bit of a demonstration, but for the anatomical man that we refer to, the arms are just straight down, kind of at a 45, maybe even a little bit less, like a 30 degree, 15 degree actually, straight down. So when we talk about like our arm, if I have my arm out, I'm going to have your distal proximal kind of considerations when you're looking at talking about something. So distal is going to be more distant. Best way to remember that. Proximal, I remember that. Close proximity warfare. Just little things to kind of help keep track of what's what. Think about your posterior, your anterior. So what's in front, what's in back. Superior, inferior. Those are a lot of basic stuff that we cover when we go through HMA school. Hopefully all of you remembered that, but we've kind of breezed over that and we're going to move in. If you need to refresh, if you need something, if you want these, this is in the chapter 6. So if you need something to look at while you go through, hopefully you have it in front of you already and you can keep going from there. So what is anatomy and what is physiology? Is there a difference? What is the difference? Why do I care? So anatomy is going to be more about the actual physical makeup of the actual components, how everything's laid out, how everything works. Whereas your physiology is going to be the biology and the chemistry components that make everything actually flow and how everything reacts to whether it be medications and whether it's going to be more injuries sustained and what's going on with your body and how it's going to react and treating for shock and the various components. So a couple little breakdowns, couple definitions and things we're going to get into. There's a lot of words on this first one. All right, I tried to chop it up, and as we go, we're going to have more pictures, and I have some hands-on stuff that we're going to look at. So just bear with me as we go through this. I know it's a cumbersome chapter. So our metabolism is simply your body's way of absorbing what is coming through. So it's not limited to food. It's not limited to medicine. There's not necessarily a very specific that we're going to worry about right now in terms of metabolism. So it's the process of absorption in the human body. Your body is metabolizing, whether it be the proteins, whether it be a food, whether it be an enzyme, whatever it is, it's metabolizing it, it's bringing it in, and it's going to process it for what you need. Homeostasis. So homeostasis is your body's balance, your body's compensation for whatever may be happening. If you have a traumatic injury, your body is going to have, it's going to be knocked off its homeostasis, where it's now going to be compensating or adjusting in ways to regain that homeostasis where it can survive, where it can function. It'll start triaging its own systems. So it's the self-regulated control, okay, of what's happening or what's being put into your body or what has come out of your body. Maybe you're bleeding. So a quick rundown of the different types of systems or the different levels that we're going to talk about. And we're only going to talk about these in brush overviews. Again, this chapter breaks down into very significant detail in some areas that you're not necessarily going to see on an advancement exam. And so I highly encourage you to read this. I highly encourage you to teach this to your junior corpsman and definitely refresh yourself, because it's critical to know your job. But we're not here to teach you your job. We're here to help you concentrate on those little pieces to excel on your advancement exams. So our chemistry level, that's going to be the very base model or component that we're going to be thinking of. And that's going to be the beginning of everything. There's over 100 chemicals. That's going to be really the atoms that make you up, all the different enzymes and chemicals that all come together and they start building up, right? It's building blocks. You have to crawl, walk, run when you're training, whether it be at sea or on deployment with the Marines or when you're in the school. They don't throw everything at you right at once. So from a genetic makeup, the chemical level is going to lead you into your organelle level. Now, organelles are going to be where it's within the cells, and it's going to be making up the cell structures themselves, the functions of the cells, and how those cells are actually going to start operating. So obviously, if now we know what's inside the cells and how those are functioning, we naturally roll into the cellular level. So the cellular level is where everything is going to start coming together in numbers. They're going to start working together. So we're going to have the smallest and most numerous of the structure units. So again, before that, the organelles, everything is consolidated into a single cell, and the cells are where they're going to start clumping together, and they're going to start working together toward a common goal or a common mission, and they're going to start flowing toward that path. So then the cells, when they're coming together in that new numerous number, that's where they're going to lead into the tissue. So your tissue level is going to be that fabric. It's what starts holding things together. It starts building layers of what you are yourself. It starts building up that genetic makeup of you. In this case, we're going to talk about organs. So your liver, your kidneys, your heart, all of these are going to have different types of tissue, different types of fabric, essentially, that is going to facilitate its purpose in your body. So the organ is going to be made up of all of these different types, which all breaks down now once the organs are together, the organs are all start working together, and that creates a system, your respiratory system, your digestive system, central nervous system. Everything starts tying together there. All of this leads to you, an organism. So that's just the building blocks and the breakdown of anatomy and physiology, what they are, how they relate, without going into too much significant detail, where we lose sight of our mission here. All right, so something to keep in mind, you may see something where you're going to see some of this stuff. Keep in mind, you're going to see third class exams are where you're going to see some of this smaller detailed stuff versus you're working your way up. IDCs, I know that you guys are learning a significant amount of anatomy and physiology being providers, and you would think that, oh, I'm going to ace this big piece of the exam or something. But if you're a second class and you're an IDC, that's phenomenal, and you have an extraordinary amount of knowledge and everything. But you should know that your advancement exams are going to be more towards your programs and your leadership and your abilities. And you're going to have to, second class level, testing for second class, you're establishing that you are a subject matter expert. When you're testing for first class and chief, you're testing on, are you able to inspect and review? Are you able to identify deficiencies and how to correct them? And it's not so much about, hey, are you able to identify this obscure or rare disease? So please keep that in mind as we go through this. So the cell, again, we already said it's the smallest, but it's got the big in numbers. They're all coming together and they're having a common goal. The brains of the operation is going to be the nucleus. So that's something else. So that's a lot of stuff you may remember from chemistry or biology in high school. Very basic stuff with a number. A magic number here is going to be our chromosomes. It's going to be 46. So remember that if you see anything on your exam about chromosomes. All right, so our tissue, a couple different tissues I want you to remember. It's going to be your epithelium. All right, that's going to be the lining in your body. It's what's going to be what's kind of connecting everything, what's kind of feeding nutrients throughout your body, and what's going to help kind of sustain that homeostasis that we talked about, right? Adipose tissue. Adipose tissue is going to be fatty tissue, all right? And our muscular and nerve. So our muscular, we're going to have two types. Two types of muscular. We're going to have our cardiac and our smooth. Smooth is going to be everything that you're working out at the gym. Every time you're running your PRT, that's going to be your smooth muscles being engaged. Your cardiac is going to be contained right only in your heart. And that's going to be a little bit different. And it interacts differently. And it's got a different composition to it because of the electrical energy and the electrical components that are built into your cardiovascular system that gives you that heartbeat. So that's why they're a little bit different. Your nerves, like I said, your nerve tissue, central nervous system, your brain, your spine, everything tying together. It's going to have a lot more O2, a lot more nutrients going to it, right? That's what's really keeping you alive, right? That's the whole show is dependent on your central nervous system staying intact. So that's going to be obviously the most complex. So the tissues, again, your epithelium, your adipose, your muscular, and your nerve. Those are going to be four big ones. They have subsections that you can break down and go off into. But if you understand those, once you can get these big blocks down, you can get into some of the smaller stuff as you build yourself up to be more of a healthcare professional, because that's the ultimate goal. All right. So our skin. So we're getting all these big picture items. We kind of understand a little bit of the building blocks and how we got to be us. So our skin. So our epidermis. You know that you have epidermis, and you know you have your dermis, and you have your sub-Q or subcutaneous. So as a corpsman, you're given a lot of immunizations. So it's important to know, is this a IM? Is this a sub-Q? We got to know the different routes and the different medications, the different immunizations, and how we're going to apply them. So understanding a little bit about your skin being the largest organ in your body, it's going to help out. So your outer part, everyone in elementary, You know, the little 8-year-olds are saying your epidermis is showing. Everyone's probably heard that when you were in elementary school. It hasn't changed. The epidermis is still the outside of your skin. The dermis is going to be your true skin. We call it the true skin because that's where all the action's happening. So everything's running through there. It's going to have very vascular. You're going to have your sweat glands and everything else. So why do we sweat? So we know our sweat glands are running through our skin. We're sweating to cool ourselves off. So especially this post 9/11 Navy that we're in, we find ourselves working in sandy, dry climates. Some of you are familiar with sweating over there. We're sweating to try to cool ourselves off. Sometimes it's more effective than not, but that's the intent behind sweating. Any of you that may live or have served in an environment that's very humid knows that with that moisture all around you, your body is sweating as well, but with all that moisture coming down on your skin, it's actually not able to evaporate. The moisture levels, there's not much of a difference. There's actually probably no difference in some of them. And so that's where you have to kind of watch for those heat injuries, because you, even though they're cranking out sweat, nothing's really evaporating. And I've seen that. I saw that in Africa. When we were in the jungles in Africa, we had some significant injuries occur from an environmental standpoint. And it was pretty interesting from the medical side to see that kind of progress. And it was a good learning experience. Now, sweat glands are all through the skin. A modified sweat gland is in our ears. And these glands, that's what actually is going to be producing our earwax. It doesn't come out as a film right away. It's once it comes out, it's helping kind of protect and lubricate from the outside. And what that's end up doing is once it comes out, if you're not cleaning out your ears quite often, that's how you're going to find yourself actually developing a wax. So, and you'll hear some people say, I put on here, I got thick skin. So we say that a lot. You know, if you don't pick on somebody, a buddy of yours, if you're not picking on him, you don't like him at that moment. It's kind of a running joke or whatever. Well, you do actually have different thicknesses in your skin. So your hands, for instance, the bottoms of your feet, these contact areas that are used every day and you're grabbing things, you develop calluses, you're running barefoot to the mailbox or something. That skin is significantly thicker and you still have a significant amount of nerve endings there, but the thickness is going to kind of take a buffer, if you would, or it's going to take that separation to allow for different sensations in different environments or different situations where you can function a little differently. And that's why that is. All right, so we're going to get into some of the actual structure of us. All right, and I have something here for us to use. All right, this is Winston. Winston is not 100% anatomically correct, but he's going to be for reference only, and so we'll manipulate him around as we need to for this. So the human body has 206 bones. Okay, that's another number. So we don't have too many instructions. Actually, we don't have any instructions that we're going to be throwing at you this time. So from a number standpoint, this chapter, you're looking pretty good. All right, so 206 bones. And osteology, just to kind of recap that, that's going to be our study of bones, study of the health of the bones, study of the function of the bones, and everything that coincides with that. So, let's see here. So we have here, we talked about the anatomical position. So you can see we have the hands facing palms. Palms are facing facing forward. So they're facing anterior. All right, we have our pain and nourishment center of the bone. So right here, in running through the core, all right, the periosteinum in the core of the bones, no matter which bone you're looking at, that's going to be where all the pain, all the nourishment, everything's going to be flowing through it. So when you break your bone, it's not your skin, it's not the nerves in your skin that's actually firing and notifying you that you're in excruciating pain. The pain is actually registering from in that little core center right there, so that periosteum. And all the nerve endings, all that tissue and everything firing in there is alarming your central nervous system, which is telling you that you are injured, that you have some sort of significant injury that you need to address. Now, when I say nourishment, it's maybe that's kind of weird, but if you are unaware of an IO, right? We give IVs all the time. We did that in school to each other half a dozen times. You go to field med, or if you went to lab tech school, whatever follow-on schools, you probably redid it there again, and then you've probably practiced since then on you or your buddies. Well, an IO is where we're able to drill into that bone, that interosseous. So there's still blood flowing through there. There's still, you can give medications and you can give fluid through there. So the bone itself is still getting nutrients. Think about that milk. Your mom always told you to drink milk and make sure that your bones would be strong and properly developed and everything. Make lots of calcium. So that's going to be where you're going to make your money in terms of your bones' health. Now, we have different types of bones. So we're looking here at Winston, and we see that we've got ribs and humerus, radial ulna. We got all these phalanges here, and we got the skull is very smooth, and the jaw moves. You know, so there's a lot of different pieces here. So what kind of bones are what? Are they all the same? How are we going to classify these? Well, the answer, we got four different ones. It's going to be your long, your short, your irregular, and your flat. So our long bones are obviously going to be your humerus, your femur, or your irregular. Well, which ones look like nothing else? Well, think about like your vertebrae. Those are going to be very irregular bones. Flat bones, you can think about parts of your cranium and parts of your rib. But the actual planes in your skull are actually still going to be partially classified, whether it be flat or... That is right. All right, so now we're going to talk about the structure. What actually makes up, what's standing you up from a frame standpoint. So here, this is not going to be anatomically correct, but what it is, it's going to be a good reference for us, and it's going to help us kind of as a guide. So here we have 206 bones in the human body. So we know that. We don't have to deal with any instructions in this particular chapter. So from a number standpoint, you're looking really good. So 206 bones makes up Winston here. All right, osteology is the study of his bones. So it's going to tell us the health of the bones, how the bones are working, the breakdown of everything that we're going to need to know for that. But how are the bones getting healthy? How do they receive nourishment? How do we know when we broke a bone? Is it the nerve in the skin that's telling you? Like, what is actually firing to tell you when pain and how healthy your bones are? Well, your periosteum, that's going to be that central component in your bone. And it's going to let you know that, hey, I'm broken. That's what's actually firing. So the skin, the muscle, none of that's actually letting you know that you have a significant injury to your body. It's going to be right in there in that periosteum. Now, the nourishment center of the bone as well. So why would that, your bones are healthy? How is that, if you may be wondering? We do IVs on each other in HMA school. If you go to a C school, you're going to do it there too, depending on what it is, lab tech or 8404 or whatever it may be. And you do them again out in the fleet. But we don't do IOs a lot on each other, unless there's something real, something serious going on. So if you've never seen one, if you've been in a limited environment where you haven't been around that, or you haven't been trained on it, I highly encourage you to go ask, maybe see a demonstration, whether it be on a mannequin or YouTube some videos, whatever it may be. But the IO is actually drilling into the bone, You're going straight into there where you're actually able to, that's going to be receiving the nourishment. So once you get in there and you're pumping fluids or medications, whatever it may be, even if you're just drinking milk, your mom always said drink milk because you need the calcium because it's going to make your bones nice and strong. That's what she's talking about. Your bones are actually absorbing that and taking it in. So your periostinums. Keep that in mind. That's what's going to keep these healthy. Now, we got a bunch of different shaped bones. We got funny shaped bones and long and skinny and fat. And just, we got a different variety here of bones to consider. And they're broken down into four different classifications. So our long bones. What's our long bone? Long bones are going to be our humerus. It's going to be our femoral. Okay, these are going to be your long bones. Your short bones, okay, are going to be exactly that. Think about all of your ankles. You could think about your knees, your ankles. You could think about your wrists, fingers, even your rest of your limbs, radial and ulna, are even going to be. They're going to be they're going to be short bones when referenced against the long bones. And then you're going to have your flat. Now your flat, you're going to think, well, I don't have very many flat bones. You know that you have your sternum. Okay, that's pretty flat. You know you're going to have your scapulas. Okay, those are pretty flat. But your dome, so your cranium here, your skull is actually going to be classified as a flat bone, even though it's rounded. So please keep that in mind. Your ribs are going to be classified as flat bones. And then you're going to have your irregular. Your irregular is going to be, a classic example of this is going to be your vertebrae. So your vertebrae is going to be, each individual one is going to be broken down and classified as an irregular bone. So starting at the top, we're going to kind of cover down on some of the different bones. Like I said, this is not a full AMP class, and this is not anatomically correct, but it is a good reference for us. So on the skull, we got 28 different bones actually make up your skull, and 22 of them are actually connected to actually make up your head, if you would. So what's actually holding everything up here together is going to be 22, and you can see the different separations in them, but it's actually what makes everything up there. So going down, you got your maxilla and your mandible, okay? You got your vertebrae, which is your C-spine. So we come back here as we travel down. So your C-spine is made up of seven. So, you know, you have seven vertebrae, which ties down into your thoracic, which makes up your 12. And I want to end over here in the lumbar with five. So if you have a hard time memorizing how many you have, it's all the times you eat. And that's how I learned it when I was in school too, is you eat at seven, you eat at 12, and you eat at five. And then you're going to end, of course, with the sacrum and the coccyx. But if you're having a hard time remembering how many vertebrae you have without breaking down into the individual detail of which one does what, that's going to give you a good idea as to how many total you have. So we talked about the scapulas already, and that's going to feed over into your humerus. Your humeruses are going down. It's going to be that funny bone that's not so funny all the time. Radial and ulna, right? If you have a hard time remembering which one's which, where do you get your pulse? It's your radial pulse. That's going to tell you which side it's on. So hopefully that's not going to be too much of a challenge for you. When you get down into the phalanges, you're going to have a lot of room down here in your pelvis. So we talk about a lot of room. We know that when we talk about trauma, that if you have a significant injury to your pelvis, what you're going to actually be considering is the storage of a lot of blood. So quick little story on that to kind of break this up. I actually had a Marine get run over in Afghanistan after a 125-pound IED went off, and the brownout effect, you get all that dust in the air and no one can see anything, you start sweeping for secondaries, and he crawled out of the vehicle, had cleared the dust. The vehicle caught fire. This Marine ran back to go get his friends, but en route back to the vehicle, he had passed out, and no one knew that he went back into the brownout cloud, and he had succumbed to his TBI, and in the process of sweeping the mind roller in the MRAP, it ended up running him over and crushing his pelvis on both sides. This ended up tearing out his urethra. He had some pretty substantial damage to both sides of his pelvis, which, think about the iliac crest. That's what this is right here. You have your iliac crest, and these had been completely broken, and the pelvis was unstable. So he did live on a good note. He's alive today, and he's working within the law enforcement community. So he had a full recovery. But the point I want to make is this is a very, very fragile, very sensitive area that it's stable, but once it becomes unstable, once you have that injury, you can see here how it's really just kind of pieced together at the sacrum. It's going to have the ball joints that kind of feed everything in. But once you kind of break that stability there and it becomes uneven, the pressure is going to kind of come in and it can kind of cant the different areas of your lumbar. So moving down, you're going to have another long bone, right? We talked about that. Femoral, you break that, you're going to be in a great deal of pain. We're going to move Winston around. Go upside down for a little while. So what do we have down here? You have your tib fib. So your tibia and your fibula, if you have a hard time remembering which one's which, tib's going to be the big one. So we'll talk a little bit more about this kind of stuff down here as we get into muscles. We're going to talk a little bit about how shin splints work and how the tib fib kind of play into that. So that's just a brush overview. What I would focus on is understanding the major, obviously the central nervous system. You want to know your 7, 12, and 5. I would highly recommend you kind of start familiarizing yourself with the true ribs, understanding how everything is kind of connected. And as you start getting more and more details, a lot of this stuff's going to start tying in. But something to help me study a little bit was I would pick an area and I would start kind of following the mechanics. And as we go through this, I'll kind of touch on it a little bit as well. But I encourage you to kind of, all right, we're going to do a shoulder exam. Well, start from the bones, okay? How is that ball joint working? And follow along and start building up, okay, what muscles are being engaged and everything. So as you start studying this stuff, as you start getting classes at your command, don't only do the exam component. Start breaking down the little layers and start going through, and that's also going to set you up for success on these advancement exams. So we move in to ligaments and tendons. So our ligaments are going bone to bone, and versus our tendons, which are going to go muscle to bone. So when you hear someone say, I had a sprain, the sprain is actually going to be referring to the ligament. It's not talking about the muscle, it's not talking about the tendon. So a sprain is actually going to be associated with the bone to bone, which is your ligament. So now the different joints, we have a couple different joints. We have a few that you're going to be kind of confused about and how that relates, but we'll get into this. So our hinge joint is going to be right here. It's going to be that elbow. Elbow is it's the mechanics of pulling up in a hinge fashion. It clicks in to where it doesn't have so much motion at that one specific point to go outward. Your elbow is actually shifting, and that's actually engaging up in your shoulder. That's why it's the hinge. You go to the saddle joint. Saddle joint's gonna be our thumbs. So your thumb actually has a couple different ranges of motion, and what you're able to do is you can do the full 360 effect, and as well as you're going to be going all the way through as needed. So obviously from a human standpoint, that's what kind of separates us physically, but that's actually specifically called a saddle joint, and that's because of the nature. If you're on a saddle, You can go forward, you can go backwards, you can go side to side. So that's kind of the mechanics, if you would, of that. So our ball and socket joint. So your socket and your ball fits right in there. So you'll hear people talk about getting a hip replacement, for instance. The hip replacement happens because of the wearing and the wear and tear that is occurring in there. So you get that nice cushion that you have from cartilage. If you had some sort of traumatic injury where you ended up compressing it and you get the bone on bone, you can get bone spurs, any of those. So a bone spur is where a piece of your bone is coming off and now you have a free floating bone spur. You'll see that a lot of times in people's feet. They've doing some rough work. They take a lot of impact on their feet, on their heels specifically. If they fall real hard and they try to land on their feet, you may see something like that. But that ball and socket joint, it's going to be that hip. It's going to be that shoulder, how it just fits in there nicely. That dislocation, for instance, is where that either pops up and goes forward or it pops out of that socket, and that's where you'll feel that gap. And you can stick your hand in there, and it's just free-floating below it. All right, so our pivot joints, that's going to be your head. Think about it, it's a pivot. So only one spot's able to move, like in basketball with that foot, you're always going to return home. You're always going to return back to that single spot that you're at. So you can move around, you have that axis to swivel, but you're always coming back here. So that's going to be your head. All this, again, is also in that chapter. So if you're having a hard time following, if you need to get a better view, that is also in there as well. So your condyle joint, same thing. It's going to be another part up here, like with your chewing. So staying up here in the head, you're going to be able to chew up and down. You can move your jaw a little bit side to side. If you don't have any TMJ or anything, that should be with the muscle strength and everything else, that should be stable. Now this last one, this gliding. So what is this gliding joint, and how does that work? Well, the gliding joint is actually going to be more associated with your vertebrae, and it's going to help as you're moving around. It's kind of like a disc plate, and it's kind of cupped in there where it's going to help shift and adjust so you have your full range of motion with your spine. So those are going to be the joints. And I encourage you to kind of play around with that. That's something as simple as you can test each other out and kind of guess, feel for it. Again, when you're doing your shoulder exams, when you're doing your knee exams and everything, those are the different ways that you can kind of do the building blocks and everything else to break down those layers and kind of tie those things together. Is this not done? So, the next piece that we're going to be talking about is all of our muscle groups. Now, muscles are kind of a team sport, if you would. There's never just one muscle being engaged to conduct a movement or an action, any sort of biological or chemical reactions to anything that you're going to be doing. So we're going to say muscle work is teamwork. Now, all the muscle activities, they work together, and they're all kind of interconnected with what's called the fascia, right? So that's going to make up a large portion, actually, of your body weight as well. So we know that muscle weighs more than fat. It will actually, as all of it's interconnected and stuff, part of the muscle growth and everything is this part right here. Now, while your primary muscle group is being engaged, say you're doing curls, or if you're doing your PRT and you're doing your push-ups and you're working your chest and you're trying to get that maximum repetition, you start feeling that pressure and that strain. Well, there's other muscles being engaged as well, along with your shoulders and part of your back. Your abdomen's engaged, maintaining that firm plank as you're going up and down doing your push-ups. So those support muscles, while your primary muscles are being engaged, so while you're lowering down and getting ready to push up, those primary muscles are moving, your antagonists are starting to relax. And so it's an alternating piece there. So the key word there, the antagonist muscle, those are going to be your support muscles, if you would, to kind of help balance that. That's something you may want to keep in mind. So the two chemical reactions going on is going to be your contraction and your recovery. And that's going to be more along the lines of like the actual makeup of the muscle and how, on a chemical level, how the muscle's reacting. So, you know, you ingest a lot of protein. The proteins, as the fibers tear, help mend everything back together. And that's how you're getting your muscle growth. Well, that contraction is going to be that repeat tearing of those fibers as the proteins come in and help with that recovery. So it's also part of that movement where you're recovering post-movement after that contraction. So the two of those have a direct relationship together. So the two chemical components are going to be your two chemical reactions, if you would, are going to be your contraction and your recovery. So dead muscle. Dead muscle is also, I think, dead bodies. So if you've ever worked in a hospital, if you worked in an ER, if you've worked EMS, if those of you that have served overseas in certain environments may have been exposed to a corpse of some sort. And so you may have seen rigor mortis. If you ever watched crime shows or any of the dramas or movies, they talk about that if a coroner is on scene in a film. Rigor mortis is the actual tensing up and that seizing of all those muscles. The muscle is dead, and it's part of that phase as it goes through. Eventually, that rigor mortis will subside, and the body becomes more lax. They don't stay in rigor the entire time. But that is actually the reaction of the dead muscles. And so it can happen anywhere from 10 minutes to about maybe 3 hours or so, depending on the situation. A lot of things come into play, the temperature, the injuries sustained. So if someone bled to death, there's going to be a different reaction versus someone who maybe had a heart attack. So that's just a little tidbit on that. But rigor mortis is actually dead muscle. All right, so we have three different types of explanations that we want to kind of remember. And one of them is tonicity. So tonicity is going to be that natural pump. So that's going to be actually what, when you grab someone's arm, that actual firmness associated with their muscle mass, that's actually the tonicity. Well, whereas your isometric, isotonic, those are going to be the two types of muscle engagement that you're going to want to remember. Metric meaning no movement. So a way to kind of remember that, isometric, your muscles are engaged, but there's no movement. So there's no follow through where your muscles are actually ended up making progress and release that strain, or they're able to complete that strain. So isometric, it's like trying to move a metric ton. That's how I remember it. And that's, again, your muscles are stimulated, your muscles are engaged, but there's no movement. You're pushing up against a brick wall. It's not going anywhere. Whereas your isotonic is the same thing. You're stimulating those muscles, you're getting those muscles engaged, but you're actually able to follow through. So it's like having a bench press. If you got too much weight on there and you're not able to move it, you could be sitting there in an isometric state and you're just going to be sitting holding it up and you're not able to follow through versus being able to complete your repetition and rack that weight. So isometric, isotonic. I recommend you know all your muscle groups. Again, like I said at the beginning, this is not an anatomy physiology class. I'm not going to run through every piece of this 121-page chapter. It's not worth your time, and it's not going to help you maximize the success potential for your advancement exam. So as a healthcare professional, you should always be trying to learn and excel and beef up those accessory skills and knowledge that you don't get to use every day. So start with the larger muscle groups, and you can start working into those accessory muscles and that start to support all the major ones. So I highly encourage you to kind of look at that in this chapter. There's some great diagrams. There's also a lot of anatomy and physiology. There's a lot of workbooks that you can print for free online. There's different stuff that you can do out there, especially as a corpsman, you have plenty in the training department at your command. But I want to emphasize a muscle that some people don't associate with being a muscle, and that's the diaphragm. So as you're going through and you start focusing on your quads and your triceps or your trapezius and your pectoris major, and you're going through and you're trying to learn all these, don't forget that the diaphragm, for instance, is a major internal muscle. Your heart is a muscle. So don't forget some of those that you may not be able to see from working out. But the diaphragm is the floor of the thoracic cavity. It's that ceiling of the abdominal cavity. So please, when you are trying to start studying these, just to kind of plant that in your head so you start thinking internally as well. Diaphragm, you don't want to forget that. So we're going to move on. I started this called Keep Your Mouth Shut. Now, we're not going to talk about dental. I know that some of you guys get a little anxious. I've heard more sailors, more corpsmen, after coming out of an advancement exam, and they say, there's too many forms or too many instructions. There's no way I can remember any of those. And dental. So those of you that are in 8701, you always get excited on those tests. But the ones that when you start seeing a series of dental questions, and if you're not in 8701, I know you get a little frustrated. We're not going to be talking about dental right now. We will talk about that later, and I highly encourage you to check back and watch that video as well. But understanding the anatomy of the mouth, understanding the mechanical digestion, all of that kind of feeds into different parts of this chapter. So you understand that we have the hard palate, soft palate. Think in terms of when you're trying to study these, you can think about your OPA. Think about your NPA. Where are those going? How do we insert the OPA? Because we know we don't just shove it in that fits the appropriate anatomy. We make sure we go in and we do the 180 degree rotation. And we do that because we know that we have a distinct difference between the hard palate and the soft palate. Keep in mind the tongue, understand the different characteristics of it, knowing that the taste buds, you got all your salivatory glands, you got your gums, your teeth, everything in there that makes up the oral digestion component, or the mechanical digestion component, and that leads back into your oropharynx and your pharynx, down into your 10-inch esophagus. So we're going to talk a little bit about the digestion piece a little bit later, but understanding just some of the basic components of that is going to be something I would be familiar with, or at least have a concept of understanding for your advancement exam. Now, I have two circulatory pitchers here. I tried to limit words. I think for this kind of topic, pitchers are a little bit better. You can get more engaged at the pointing. I remember that when I was taking, I think maybe my first class exam, it might have been a second class exam, we actually had some advanced cardiac life support questions. And it was talking about the different blood loss associated with cardiac events, cardiogenic shock or hypovolemic shock. We had some different stuff in there that kind of tied into these. And I felt a little more comfortable about it because I had taken some civilian side education courses in paramedicine. But I can definitely see how if you aren't engaged in this particular type of medicine, because we have corpsmen all over serving in all types of Navy medicine. And I can see how this either gets confusing or you need a refreshing. So we're going to try to cruise through this. I highly encourage you, if you forget this, to try getting a diagram and maybe try labeling it, doing the arrows, what's oxygenated, what's not oxygenated, and so forth. So we're going to start with our vena cavas. Our superior and inferior vena cavas are going to be feeding. And the superior is going to be your torso, your arms, your head. Your inferior is going to be your lower extremities, everything below the heart. Now, these are veins. So keep in mind, the rule is that veins all lead back to the heart. Arteries are all leading away from the heart, with the exception of two special ones. We're going to touch on that in just a little bit as a refresher. So those enter your right atrium, okay? Your right atrium pumps through your tricuspid valve into your right ventricle, okay, which goes to your pulmonary valve. You know it, the pulmonary valve, if you need a refresher on that, pulmonary, it's going to be your respiratory system. So it's going through the pulmonary valve because it needs to get to the respiratory system to be oxygenated. So at this point, on the right side, we are deoxygenated. Everything has been spent. It's coming back to the heart, and it's ready to go another round. So it goes pulmonary through the pulmonary arteries. So here's our exception. If you see something that talks about what artery carries deoxygenated blood, we only have one. That pulmonary artery takes the blood, because the rule is, no matter what, arteries take it away from the blood, and it comes through the circulatory system, funnels it through to your pulmonary system, where it gets oxygenated. Rule about veins, it comes back through the pulmonary vein. So that's our other exception, both pulmonary. Our pulmonary vein carries oxygenated blood back to the heart, entering left atrium. Our left atrium is then going to push down to the left ventricle. What you're going to see here, there's going to be a little bit wider piece of pink. The pink is going to simulate actual just muscle tissue. So if you see anything that talks about what is the strongest of the ventricles, or is there a stronger of the ventricles, the answer is the left ventricle is the strongest. The reason for that, if you remember, that's what's going to force that through. It's going to push with all its might a little bit harder, because at that point, it's going to be going through the aortic valve into the aorta. So as you start studying the circulatory system, once you get the components of the heart, it's going to be the easiest place to start, because that's where the whole show happens. Once you get there, once you hit the aorta, that's where I encourage you to start learning your arteries. Again, I don't think that anyone can learn everything all at once. Even our providers that we work with, if you look at medical officers, they don't graduate med school and they know everything. They have to do a residency. There's follow-on learning, and as a healthcare professional, that's why they call it practicing medicine, for even for a physician, because medicine's always changing, and if you don't stay up with it, if you don't refresh, and if you're not staying up with the new stuff, you're going to kind of get lost and left in the past in terms of medicine. So I highly encourage you to refresh this. If you're new to the Navy, if you're new to medicine, I encourage you to start at the heart, start learning your arteries. Your arteries will eventually lead you back through to your veins. So aorta, from there, it's going to disperse. So over here, just to touch on it, again, I'm not going to run through all the arteries and all the veins and everything, but your capillary bed. Your capillary bed is that gas exchange that we learned about, right? It's where all that oxygenated blood here in the red starts spreading out throughout all your tissue, and it starts exchanging and starts perfusing into your fingers, your toes, your knees, your eyeballs, all over your body. All your organs are getting proper perfusion. That's going to be a healthy human being. We know this. So your arteries, your arterioles, your capillaries, all these little tissue cells in the yellow around it. Your veins turn into venules, again, that lead to the arterioles in that capillary bed. Following that aorta, that's going to help you start the whole learning process. And you just start tracing. Learn the upper half, then the lower half, whatever you want to do. And you can start really building yourself up there. Now, as you start learning some of this stuff, a trick that I had to do when I was in school, and something that I've had new corpsmen do as well, is take a plain white t-shirt, and you put the t-shirt on, and you identify the outline of maybe where your arms are, where your abdomen ends, your belly button, your nipples. You start identifying the basic characteristics, so when they take the shirt off, you can put it on the tabletop. What is a good way to identify the placement of all of the arteries or all the veins where all the organs are is you start drawing them on the shirt and see how much of a complete organ system that you can create. And then, or you can do just the circulatory system or the respiratory system. You can do it in pieces, front and back. And what you're going to be able to do is color that, make red for arteries, blue for veins. You can draw arrows, you can label them. And you can get as detailed as you want. If you want to just do circles and ovals just for placement, and then you want to see the interconnected workings and you start practicing that, when you put it on, you're going to be able to see the actual system on your body. You can actually have somebody else wearing it, and you can teach a little class that way. But it's just a creative way to get engaged and do some hands-on stuff with maybe some junior sailors or yourself. It's something fun you can do with your kids if you're at home and you're trying to study and get them engaged and spend some time with your family while you're also trying to balance this work-study dynamic that that can be really taxing. So we're going to move over here into the brain. So once we get to the brain's obviously going to be the most complicated, the most sophisticated of things that we're going to have in our body. It's going to require a significant amount of oxygen. It's going to require a significant amount of nutrients. If it doesn't have these things, you can get illnesses and injuries that can result in death. You think about high altitude stuff. When I did some mountain warfare training, if you don't have proper perfusion, because the oxygen saturation levels at certain altitudes, when you're at 11,000 feet, 12,000 feet, you start getting people with altitude sickness or high altitude pulmonary edema, high altitude cerebral edema. These kind of injuries are all because of the different way that your body is coping with lack of oxygen, for example. You may see scuba injuries for the pulmonary or even the cerebral conditions. So understanding the different lobes and simply understanding where they are will help with some of the connections in the rest of your system and how they work. Your occipital lobe, your brain stem, your frontal lobe. Getting into all the minute details of what each specific part is doing and how it's working is not necessarily the right path to start with. There are so many things. Your advanced exam is going to be so cumbersome in terms of material and everything. Your anatomy and physiology stuff is only a part of it. So for study purposes, for success purposes, again, I encourage you to start with the large building blocks. And then as you become more comfortable with it and you can teach others, that's where you're going to want to start digging in, and you can actually take the frontal lobe and look at the memory part of it and how that associates and feeds in to your temporal and so forth, and how it makes those different changes in your body. We'll talk a little bit about gray matter, white matter, and we'll just kind of cover some of the stuff that you may see on an advancement exam coming up.